Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. I have SMA Type 2, and I am a columnist and forums director for SMANewsToday.com. Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. And today we have a really exciting episode. We have a full house here. Today we're doing a roundtable panel discussion on the subject of men's mental health. I will do a women's one episode later on. But for today, I have four guests with me who I'm really excited for. First off, we have Paris Dancy. Paris is one of our columnists at BioNews for the Cushing's disease site. And he is a mental health professional, just recently moved to Houston, Texas. So, Paris, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. And then also new to the show, but longtime friend of mine, and who you will probably have, if you're a faithful reader of our columns on SMA News Today, you will have seen his name mentioned by me and several other of our writers. But Matt LaFleur, he works in human resources at BioNews, and he has Friedreich's ataxia. His column is available on our FA site, and he also has a background in mental health. So, Matt, thanks so much for coming on today.
Well, no problem, Kev. Excited to be here.
Absolutely. And then for our two returning guests of the show, one who's been on many, many times, Michael Morale, who works here at BioNews and makes videos and multimedia content for our SMA site. Been on the show many times, you know him well. So Michael, thanks for coming on today.
Hey Kev, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And then last but not least, we also has also been on the podcast before and been featured on 31 Days of SMA and Monday Shoutouts. My friend Ty DeKema, who also has SMA. Ty, thanks for coming on today, man.
Thanks a lot, man. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. Well, as I said, this will be a packed discussion, so we'll get started in just a minute. And before we do, if everyone could please listen to a brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast was brought to you by Genentech, the makers of an FDA-approved treatment for SMA. To learn about our study results across different types of people with SMA, visit approvedforsma.com. That's approvedforsma.com.
Okay, Paris, we'll start with you. So first off, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background with Cushing's disease? And then I want to talk a little bit about how that coincides with your work as a mental health professional.
Absolutely. My name is Paris Dancy, originally from Pensacola, Florida, recently relocated to Houston, Texas, and I am a mental health professional, as Kevin stated. My encounter with Cushing's disease started back in 2015 when I was diagnosed with having a pituitary tumor. Prior to that, I was dealing with a lot of symptoms of from the pituitary tumor, which was extreme weight gain, difficulties with my own moods, my mental health, the libido, a lot of issues that I was dealing with at the time. Sought out some help from my PCP, but he wasn't really too sure, and he had me taking a bunch of different medications, steroid-wise. And I believe from that transition to my endo is whenever the Cushing's disease started, because my endo was able to discover a few things along the way, made a referral, ended up getting the discovery of the pituitary tumor. But then I ended up having surgery in 2016, the transsphenoidal, and then I ended up having a gamma knife procedure the following month in December 2016. So since then, I have not had any recurrence of the tumor, but I did still suffer from the after effects. And as a result, the Cushing's disease, which I have been working through. And now I do feel like I'm in a much better place overall. I use my time now to advocate as well as help others who may be struggling with it as well, but other mental health disorders as well.
Thank you so much. And Paris, we were talking about before recording the specific type of mental health work you do. So can you talk about that, the difference between therapy and counseling coaching?
Absolutely. Therapy is more of a healing and it's more focused on your feelings and identifying a lot of what is causing you to feel the way that you feel. I do not operate in that way with therapy as much as I do with counseling and coaching. Most of the work that I do is solution focused. So if you already understand what's going on and maybe you're just having a hard time overcoming some of these barriers that you keep coming up against, that's where I come in. And I do a lot of goal setting with you. I do a lot of skill building and I do a lot of techniques that we start to implement and work in daily. So that way you're able to start to overcome those barriers. You start to gain a lot of confidence. But then also you're starting to see that, hey, you know what? Once I've put a plan and action into place, I am able to start accomplishing things as long as I stay focused and diligent. So that is more the line of work that I do in the mental health field.
That's great. That's great. And Matt, so I mentioned to you in the intro that you have a background in mental health as well. And can you talk about that? Well, also, same as Priest, just introduce yourself a little bit and what Friedreich's ataxia is. And then if you want to talk a little bit about your background with mental health.
Yeah, sure thing. So Friedreich's ataxia is a progressive disease. For me, we noticed it when I was about 11. It interfered with the way I was walking and, kept progressing from there. By the time I was 18, I needed to use a wheelchair and then kept progressing from there. It slowly started affecting my speech and hand movements and things like that. So not a fun disorder to live with, but what is. Now my education in mental health kind of stems from FA in a lot of ways, because I went to undergrad in English at literature. So I was planning to come out of it and be an English teacher. But I was going to be the cool English teacher, the one the kids would hang out with and talk to about what was going on in their lives. A thing with that is that I am an introvert. So I did not want to be on a stage performing for younger kids every day. I would feel really uncomfortable with them judging me and whatnot. So lo and behold, I discovered that there was such a thing as counseling. So something to where I could do what I wanted, but not be in front of the kids and talking every day. So I applied in that field and thankfully I got in. So I went to grad school in counseling and loved it. I loved everything about it. My thesis in grad school, it was existential counseling for people with disabilities. So the importance of finding a meaning, finding a purpose when you're saddled with a disabling condition. And that was really impacting. So by the time I graduated from grad school, I was on fire, man. I was like a 4.0 student. I was top of the game, but I could never find a career. I can never find a place that would hire me. And I realized that my debilitating condition had a lot to do with that. Like I couldn't drive to a place, so I'd have to get a ride. And my skills in a manual wheelchair weren't up to par. So I couldn't get from the front of the building to the back of the building quickly. So I couldn't get hired and I in turn became really depressed. But through that, years later, I found a job for Friedrich's ataxia News, writing about life with my disorder. So I could totally do that. So I was super excited to apply and I got accepted and I kept growing along with the company, and I'm super thankful for that. So I got elevated. Right now, my job title is culture coordinator. And What's fascinating to me is that I'm able to use some aspects of what I learned in the mental health field, like the existentialism. I think that's super important for people with disabilities to find their reason and find why they're continuing to go on, you know? So that is what I like to relate in my columns and in basically what I do from day to day. So I'm really grateful for my education. You know, I'm not a counselor per se anymore, but I love what I learned and I love applying that to what I do now.
I will say you're the unofficial BioNews counselor, having worked with you for years. You definitely have bring those skills to the table. So absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And then Michael, so you've been making YouTube videos and podcasts for years about SMA and primarily on the informational side, but recently you did start making content about your mental health journey. So can you talk about that and when you started recognizing that and exploring that part of yourself?
Sure. You know, I started noticing that I was becoming a little bit depressed. I was having some anxiety issues. And it really started when my mother passed away in 2008. And it was just me and my father. Not long after my mother passed away, my father started showing signs of early onset Parkinson's. So we had to hire a live-in caregiver that would be with us, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. And she worked with me and my dad. And I started thinking, I mean, I always knew that I was going to have somebody live with me, you know, not being able to transfer, not being able to eat, you know, without assistance and everything. So I knew what those boundaries were. And so I started looking at, you know, what would happen after my father passed away. You know, would I be able to make enough money to stay in my house with a caregiver? Would I have to sell my house, move into a group home? So my older brother has a background in hospice care, and he's a you know, just really, really smart guy. And we started talking about it, and we went and visited a couple of group homes, but they were mainly for people that were really going through really strong, what word am I looking for? Alzheimer's symptoms. And so I was told, yeah, you can bring your bed and you can bring your clothes, but you can't have a computer. You can't have a television, you know, and basically it was, you know, the doors locked from the inside. Nobody was allowed out. And it was really depressing, you know, and it really threw me for a loop. So when my father passed away in 2015, you know, I do make enough to, you know, pay for my caregivers. It's a family, a mother, father, and their daughter that live with me, along with their soon-to-be 9-year-old grandson. And so I've got a house full of people, which is good because I'm a very people-oriented person. So, you know, it still haunted me. It still haunts me today. You know, what if my caregivers leave? What if I lose my job? So I knew that my problem was bigger than me. It was bigger than what I felt like I could deal with. So a couple of months ago, I talked to my internist about it and told her what I was going through. She got in touch with her PA, and her PA called me, and she was very empathetic about what I was going through. And she said, you know, it just sounds like you need someone to talk to, someone that can help you work through these issues. So I started meeting with a counselor a couple of months ago, and she understands what I'm going through. She said that she can help me. She gave me a couple of books to read. And so I got those books on Audible, because it's hard for me to, you know, actually physically pick up a book and turn the pages. So I found the books on Audible and listened to both of them. They're fantastic books. So it's just, you know, I guess my problems were, I try to please everybody. And she said that She said, it sounds like your problem is you take on other people's problems. You know, you don't know how to say no. And the book that I'm reading basically teaches you how to set your own boundaries, how to say no without fear of reprisal. And she's going to be working with me on that. And really, you know, the only person that I actually talked to about this was my physical therapist. My physical therapist and I are very close. I can talk to her. She's very understanding. She listens. And I felt like for a while, she was the only one that really got me. You know what I'm saying? It's like she understood what I was going through. And that's why I'm so close to her now, is because, you know, her husband, and she has a child that just turned one about 3 or 4 months ago. So she's got a lot on her plate, but I felt like I could really open up to her and talk to her. So that's what the counselor is for. I mean, I still talk to Emily every week when I go into physical therapy, and we talk about what I'm going through. So yeah, it's just basically, I need to learn how to set my goals and not let other things worry me as much as they have. Now, my therapist did prescribe, I can't think of the name of it now, but it's just a mild antidepressant. It's like less than 10, it's like less than 10 milligrams. So it's not, you know, affecting me mentally as far as, you know, keeping me from doing things, but it is very relaxing. I don't think about these things. I mean, for a long time, I wouldn't go to sleep till 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning because these things were just always on my mind and I couldn't get my mind to shut down. And then it would be the first thing that I would think about when I woke up. So I feel like I'm getting a little bit better. It's not the last thing on my mind when I go to bed. It's not the first thing that's on my mind when I wake up now. So we're slowly making some progress. But, you know, she told me, she said, this is going to be at least a year-long journey for me to try to figure out these things that are going on with me. So, you know, I think the important thing to remember is, you know, asking for help is not a sign of weakness. You know, it really is a sign of strength. If you can tell that the problem that you have is bigger than yourself, and it took me a while to do it, but at least now I think I'm on the right track.
That's great, Michael. Thank you so much. And yeah, no, I think that is definitely a common thing in the rare disease and disability communities, is can be trouble asking for help, and also that anxiety about caregivers and everything else. And Ty, I think, so I want to talk about some of those topics. And also with you, I know, so we've had you on the podcast before, and you are a strong advocate for mental health resources and disability representation, particularly with your art. So I wanted to ask you that, in what ways do your art and music allow you to explore these topics?
Here in Grand Rapids, Michigan, I have a decent presence here in the community and the surrounding areas too. And I'm able to utilize my art as a way to not just visually portray, you know, representation of disabled folks, but also to like use that as a platform to speak on certain things, like mental health, like you said. I'm a big proponent of going to therapy. I'm actively in therapy myself, especially, you know, in the, as the pandemic has taken its toll on all of us, I think it's more important now than ever to be actively in that kind of realm, you know, learning how we can be better to the people around us and to ourselves, really, and finding that balance. So a lot of my work, like I said, is rooted in creating art, mainly visually, and then being, you know, using that as a way to be present in the music community as well, and being kind of a figure for disabled folks in that kind of space. And it's oftentimes in those spaces that I get to do some of my public speaking stuff. So I've spoken on stages locally and regionally, before, between music sets, kind of bringing awareness to crowds like that about either disability issues, community issues, mental health issues. And like the speaking stuff and the visual art, it kind of lends to each other. You know, it's almost like a cross promotion of itself. And then, it's just a beautiful way to build a community that way too, because there's other folks in those crowds and in those performance spaces that like focus on the same kind of issues. And so we kind of build a community that way and then offer resources to folks as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And Ty, I wanted to say too, on that note, because I think when we recorded our episode last year, it was still before you had moved out. And now you are living independently or like in a community and with caregivers. Can you talk about that experience as well and the connection to mental health there as well?
Oh, yeah. Moving out on my own, getting my own apartment and having to coordinate, you know, everything all on my own, it really did take a big toll on my mental health. And I'm glad it was something I recognized early on, and I have like a good group of friends and good caregivers around me to help me recognize some of that stuff. I realized like how much I had really burned myself out, even before the pandemic, and then when it started, and trying to coordinate a move during all of that and trying to keep up with my art and speaking stuff and writing as well, and then also maintain like these connections that I've built for years and years, and now kind of transitioning to most of that being online, at least up until the last couple months. And I had been feeling just like really burnt out, like I didn't have like, it really didn't feel like I had a lot left to give. And so felt like I was letting a lot of people down and not being able to be quite as present. And so I'm glad I was able to start regularly attending therapy after that, because it's been helping me find like a balance and realizing like, you know, things change and things fluctuate, and it's important to just communicate, even like when you're not going to be able to be as present with someone or a group of folks, and you're doing so in order to cultivate yourself and your own mental fortitude to be able to come back to those settings and offer more than what you would have been able to had you continued to just keep branding through yourself like that. So that was a big realization I had once I started living independently here at my apartment and such. So
that's great. No, I think absolutely balance is key and can be very hard to attain. And we'll talk more about that as this conversation goes on. But guys, this has been great so far. And before we continue, if everyone could please listen to one more brief word from our sponsor.
This podcast is made possible by a sponsorship from Genentech. Are you living with SMA, or are you a caregiver for someone who is? A treatment has been FDA approved based on studies of different types of people living with SMA. Genentech extends a special thanks to all the individuals, families, and healthcare providers who participated in the studies that led to making this treatment option a reality. To learn more about this treatment, visit approvedforsma.com.
Okay, so Paris, I want to come back to you. So we've had some really great points brought up here about particular, like Ty was just talking about, you know, maintaining that balance in life. And since you being a counselor and coach to people, offering, like you said, the more practical solutions, what are some way, like if someone comes to you saying, I just feel like my life is like really disorganized and I'm trying to find that balance, what are some practical strategies you offer them and help them apply to their lives?
One of the things that I do that I heard Michael say is absolutely true, that you got to do is set boundaries. And sometimes It's not always the boundaries with everyone else. One thing I like to tell people all the time, don't be a hypocrite to yourself. Look at yourself and see, are you taking on too much? Is there other things going on that maybe you really can't commit to, but because that you want to always be helpful, you want to always be there for someone, that you're committing to things, but in the time that you're doing that, you're not necessarily replenishing yourself at all either. You're not giving yourself that time or giving you that opportunity to be able to really set a solid plan, a goal. When someone says they're overwhelmed like that, I start looking at, okay, tell me what your schedule looks like. You know, what can we prioritize as areas that we need to, that you need to always handle and deal with? First, I start with a monthly, whether that is, you know, you got to pay your bills each month. You know, you got to take care of this. So you're going to be working. Then we start working backwards all the way until we get to, all right, now a daily goal. And what I try to get people to do more than anything, don't set like a 10, 15 list daily goal that you're going to try and get all those things done. Because realistically, there's 24 hours in a day, and how you use that time is going to be very important. I usually say set a morning goal, set an afternoon goal, set an evening goal. And then once you're able to master that, where you can get a goal done at each time of the day, then let's see about adding another one on there. Then add another one and see when you start to feel like, okay, this is good enough. I can really manage this. It can be difficult a lot of times. And one of the things that Ty said that I think is really important also is we're dealing with change. And when one thing, I don't care who you are, I don't care how old you are, I don't care what's going on, everyone has to deal with change. You got to be able to understand that change is going to happen. Change is doing what it's supposed to do. It's up to us to adjust to it. We have to be able to, okay, this time of the season, I know what I have to do in this time, and being focused on that. So I always try to take them back to, it's normal to be in that space on time. For instance, what you were saying, Ty, about all the moving and taking care and all these different things, there's so many moving parts that normally you are, it's natural for you to get a little bit anxious because it's like, all right, man, I got all this I got to take care of. And then a good thing that I really heard that you said was that you got a good support around you. I think that's awesome. I think that's huge. I'm an advocate of that because if you have a good supportive group around you that understands, it does take a lot of load off of you and it helps. We cannot do anything on our own. And that is the other thing that I stress highly because a lot of people think I could just do it by myself. I can't. We're not built that way. That's not how we were made. We were not made to function alone. We need others. We got to be able to help communities, support groups, all those things. I think is huge. So when we're talking about that, when somebody's overwhelmed, those are the places that I always go back to. First, let's prioritize, let's slow everything down. And now let's start breaking everything down and forming a plan, looking at what areas can we focus in on first. And if you have some stressors in there, just throwing this in, try to reduce or eliminate those stresses because that's not going to help with what you're trying to accomplish at all.
That's great. And I think a lot of those are really applicable to our communities. And I think that you guys all brought up really good points about, you know, even in communities like ours where we have to constantly rely on people, for people like me, Michael, Ty, and Matt to have caregivers. And like, even when it's something lifelong we're dealing with, like it still can be really hard asking for help. And I know many at BioNews, many of our contributors have written about this subject. And Matt, this is something I want to ask you about too, because so like, I know we've had this conversation many times about how, you know, like for me, SMA, while it is still progressive, it's something I've lived with my entire life. You had more a later diagnosis and you had that experience of, you know, being ambulatory before and then gradually adjusting to the life of a disabled person and dealing with everything that comes with that. And so can you talk about that in relation to your mental health journey and also how you've come to accept when you need to ask for help and just strategies to deal with that mentally?
Sure thing, man. Yeah, like you said, being ambulatory and being quote unquote healthy in the past is both a blessing. It's both a, whoa, is both a blessing and a curse. Because, yeah, I do know what it's like, and I'm also rather frustrated with myself, and that's pretty unhealthy. So, like you said, how do I get used to, I don't even want to say relying, but accepting help from others is huge. It's something I'm constantly, hopefully I'm okay at it, but it's always room to improve. I think that the matter at hand is to, you know, I'm kind of like a resounding gong, but I'm all about finding your meaning, finding your purpose. If there's a reason for you to be here and you're sure of that, then you're okay with seeing about asking help from others or helping, having others help you get by, because you're worth it. And I want to always keep that at the forefront of everyone I talk to, communicate with mine, that no matter what you're going through, no matter what your disorder has taken away from you or not, you're still valuable. There's still something you can do that no one else can do. And you have to realize that and learn and know that truly. And then asking for help from others becomes so much less of a burden. You know, in my youth, in my younger days, I did not want to ask others for anything, any kind of help, because I thought that was a sign of weakness. And I'm only now growing from that, because I have to remind myself that asking for help isn't a sign of weakness. It's not even strength. It's not stupidity. You know, if I can't do something and you can do it well, why the heck wouldn't I ask you to do it for me? That would just make us both happier to get by. So that is what I'm constantly trying to teach myself and hopefully show others, that our worth is not defined on what we can or cannot do. It is who we are.
Absolutely. I already said that. And kind of on that note too, this is a question I want to throw out to anyone can answer, but you know, I think mental health is more openly discussed nowadays, but there are still a lot of unfortunate stigmas around it. And one of them is that, like, you know, the old notion of like men have to be strong and shouldn't talk about their feelings. And it's like really outdated, but unfortunately, I think it is still common in many circles. And so I just want to put it out there, like, have you guys come across and had to deal with that idea? And what are some ways that you counteract those stigmas?
Yeah, you know, Kevin, when I was being raised, my parents never let me use my wheelchair as an excuse. So I couldn't say, well, I can't do something because I'm in a wheelchair. Now, granted, they didn't let me go down a flight of, you know, 50 steps to prove that I can't do it. But they let me fail. They allowed me to fail. And some of my greatest achievements, or some of my greatest things that I've learned in my life, was through failure. You know, I wasn't allowed to not only use my wheelchair as an excuse, but they never allowed me to get down on myself. You know, they told me, they said, yes, you're sitting in a wheelchair. That's okay. You know, I was still required to do good at school. I had to act just like every other kid. I got in trouble like every other kid. I did a lot of stupid things whenever I was growing up, but they didn't shelter me. They didn't wrap me in bubble wrap, you know. They allowed me to make those mistakes. So, and this whole notion about, you know, well, you're a guy, so you shouldn't show your emotions. I was really lucky. My father was an extremely emotional person, and he would cry at a movie, you know, and he never hid the fact that he was emotional. And I think that's what I loved about him the most, but actually both of my parents, because they were very emotional. They didn't hide their emotion. You know, if you wanted to cry, you cried. That was the way it worked. You weren't ridiculed for it. You know, I never heard, hey, wait a minute, you're a guy, you're not supposed to cry. Big boys don't cry. Well, that was never said in our house, you know? And so I think it depends on how you were raised. There's so many factors that go into it. You know, it's like I said, asking for help is not a sign of weakness. Well, guys are taught from a very early age, usually, that, you know, you're a guy, you should be able to do that, you know? Well, that's not always the case. That's not always the case. So you have to know when you need help.
Definitely. Well, and Ty, I'm thinking on that note too, like you and I have seen, ourselves included, a lot of people like in the SMA community and other disability communities really be more active on social media and talk about some of those issues. So do you think that's helped kind of decrease some of those stigmas as well and make people more vocal?
Absolutely, I do. I think for me, it comes from a disability standpoint. Like, I feel like there's a lot of, you know, society tells us a lot how to feel about ourselves as disabled people, especially disabled men. You know, because there is like so much inaccessibility out there, and, you know, we're kind of taught to just, beyond just being quote unquote burdensome, we're taught to be like all appreciative of all everything that we get. I'm not saying that we shouldn't be appreciative, but it's like the second we express some sort of upset or hard feeling, I find, at least in my personal experience, we get thrown back in our faces all that we are afforded. And there's not a lot of progress to be made when we're not even allowed to talk about the things that we feel that we're missing. And like you said, the rise of social media, especially in the disability community, really finding our collective voice on platforms like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, we're really able to express and echo each other, and it kind of builds this collective voice of being able to express the way that we're hurting. And then that way, as a collective, it's a lot less scary. Like you said, so many ways that we've been taught to suppress those emotions. If we're doing it as a collective, it's a lot less scary to express those things.
Yeah, I love that. I think that, oh, go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I was just going to echo that because I think he hit on some great points. I know in my own experience with the FA, growing up with this condition that, you know, nobody had ever seen before, I was discouraged from talking about it. So it was just kind of my thing that I kept in private that I was battling with. And apparently that blew out the window because now I write a column about it. So I talk about it all the time. But yeah, for a while, I just thought it was my burden to bear. Nobody really wanted to hear about what I was going through. But what I, you know, the first night of my grad school, one of the teachers said something that I really resonated with. She said, sometimes the best way to get over something is to go through it. So I really take that to heart. And I think that that is necessary for us people with disabilities, for men in general, and for everyone in general, just to name the sucky stuff that you're going through. And by naming it, you have power over it and you can see about it. So I think that's a lot more manly than living in fear of what you don't talk about.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And Michael, you wanted to say something too?
Yeah, I did. One of the things that I was going to mention earlier was that when I was growing up, I wasn't around a lot of other handicapped children. It's not that my parents kept me from being around them, but I didn't feel comfortable being around other handicapped people, because even at a very young age, I mean, I didn't know that I had SMA till I was 33. I'd been misdiagnosed for years and years. But up until that point, I was uncomfortable being around other people that were handicapped, whether it be mental or physical, because even at my young age, I saw how society labeled people. They would label you. And, you know, my father had numerous people come up and ask, you know, oh, does your son have Down syndrome? No, he doesn't have Down syndrome. He just can't walk. You know, does your son have a mental ailment? No, he doesn't. He just can't walk. I call that being vertically challenged. But still, I saw how society labeled people. And it was when I started working for BioNews. Kevin, I met you at the Cure SMA conference in 2018 when it was here in Dallas. And I got there early. And I've mentioned this to you about, you know, I got there early enough where I saw all these little children being taken out of their cars, put in their $60,000 wheelchairs and being hooked up to ventilators or having their tracheotomies hooked up to where they could breathe. And seeing this, knowing that they had SMA, it was weird. I started thinking to myself, at least I'm better off than they are. And then it hit me, why am I feeling better about myself after seeing somebody that was worse than me? And this flood of emotion came over me. So I went and found a private area and I cried because it was a lot to take in. I had never seen that many people with SMA. To be honest with you, that was probably the first time I had seen more than one person with the same disease that I had. But society will label somebody very quickly. And I disagree with that. You know, I ended up working with the Special Olympics, being a caregiver for a kid. It was my job to make sure he got to all of his events. And what I found funny was he was so happy. He had a huge smile on his face. And I noticed that about all the children that were attending the Cure SMA conference in 2008. They were all happy. They were smiling. Their parents were smiling. You know, their parents got to see them interact with kids. So that kind of brought a little bit of quote unquote normalcy to their life, which is probably something that they don't see on a regular basis. And so the kid that I worked with at the Special Olympics, this is back whenever I was in college, he actually took care of me at lunch. I mean, he asked me if I would like to eat lunch with him and his friends. And I said, sure. Well, I couldn't get the sandwich out of my bag. I couldn't get the Coke or the Dr. Pepper, whatever drink that they gave us. And so he got the sandwich out of my bag, opened the drink for me, and I never had to ask him for help. He knew that I needed help and he did it. And it was amazing. It was eye-opening for me. So I'm hoping that society will quit labeling as much as they do. Even to this day, they do it. And it makes me very, very angry.
No, and I think that story totally speaks to the nuances of the SMA community and disability communities as a whole, because I've had an experience as well at conferences where, you know, when you're all together, it's like, you don't have to worry about those labels of like the constant questions and the like, being around people who don't understand what SMA and what disability is. You all understand each other regardless of levels of severity or backgrounds. It's just that really beautiful community aspect. Right. And it's something that, yeah, I wish like larger society would understand more. But yeah, that's a great point.
Yeah, exactly. I went to a Texas Ranger game one year, probably about 4 or 5 years ago. And when I was going through the gate to show, you know, my ticket and everything, the lady that was taking my ticket knelt down to where she could get at eye level with me. And she screamed at the top of her lungs, "I'm so happy you came to the Ranger game." And I looked at her, I said, "Ma'am, my hearing is perfectly fine. I can hear you. You don't have to yell. I just can't walk." You know, and I just thought it was funny that, you know, and I got to meet George Bush one year, whenever old man Bush was president. And when he came up to me, he shook my hand and he told me, he said, "Hello, my name is George Bush." And I thought to myself, "You've got to be kidding me." And so I looked at him, I said, "You know, hello, Mr. President, my name is Michael Morales. Glad to meet you." And the look on his face was priceless. He thought, "Oh my God, this kid can talk," you know? And so after he left the building, Secret Service came up to me. And you know the old stories about Secret Service, how they carry Uzis and submachine guns under their jackets? It's true. And they told me, they said, "The president would like you to follow us." And I said, "Okay, I mean, what am I going to do? Say no. So they took me out to his motorcade and he got out of his limousine and he apologized to me. He got down on his knee where he was at my level and he said, "Hey, I'm so sorry that I did that to you." And I thought that was really cool because he admitted that what he did was wrong, but you know, it wasn't meant to be rude or anything. It was, but I don't think he meant it. So, you know, again, society.
Well, it just speaks to like the larger systemic problem of ableism and how there are plenty of very well-meaning, good-intentioned people who don't realize when they are being horribly ableist. And so I am glad, I know I've heard that story before and I'm glad he did apologize after, but yeah, I know we've been, me, Ty, Matt, we can all like share plenty of stories similar to that one. But guys, I know this has been fantastic and I want to thank you all for sharing your experiences here. And just wrapping up here, if we, either we can just go around, if you want to just give just a couple words of advice you have for listeners out there, particularly those in rare disease and disability communities, in regards to something you want to say about mental health. So Paris, we'll start with you.
Hey, Kevin, again, thanks for having me on. I enjoyed it. I love listening to each one of you guys. All the stuff y'all said was insightful. What I would leave is just always speak up, stay encouraged, continue to fight, and continue to bring more light and exposure to what is going on. Because the more that it's out there, the more that people see it, the more educated they become. You know, education is a good way to combat a lot of that stigma that does get attached. And I think that, Michael, keep doing your YouTube videos, keep doing your art, Ty, the music, and Matt, you just continue, man, to do what you do. I've seen you a few times, and I love what you do, man. And all you guys, man, you're inspiration. You encourage me. I don't always say it, but I do read, and I take a look at everything that's going on. So absolutely, man. Y'all continue to do the work, the great work that you're doing, and stay encouraged. Keep fighting a good fight.
I love it. I love it. And Matt, what about, what words of wisdom do you want to leave listeners with?
Yeah, thank you, Paris. That's real nice. So what I would tell everybody is to be authentic and be genuine. That relates a lot of what Paris said earlier that I liked so much I wrote it down. Don't be a hypocrite to yourself. So if things aren't easy for you, if you're not happy, if you're sad or whatever, don't be ashamed of that. Don't sweep that under the rug. Talk about it to someone who cares about you because it's worth it. We want to see you happy. You're a lot better at being an authentically happy individual than being a manly stowaway, you know, who never talks about what you're going through. So be real, be genuine, be authentic because people care and people want to hear from you, whatever you're going through. And no matter what things look like right now, you can make it through whatever you're going through. So keep that in mind, keep your chin up and find the right people to surround you because we won't hear about you.
Absolutely. And then Michael, what advice do you have?
You know, I've been really lucky of all the jobs that I've had. I taught college for 18 years. I worked for ExxonMobil, retired from both. And of all the jobs that I've had, other than teaching, my job with BioNews has been the most rewarding because it's where I found my voice. You know, I mean, I taught college and I loved doing it. And I would go back to teaching in a heartbeat. But BioNews employs people with these diseases, like Kevin, you've got SMA, you know, Matt's got FA. What better source of information do you want? You know, I mean, you can hear somebody read about SMA and then regurgitate it back out on paper. But would you rather listen to an able-bodied person talk about SMA or from someone who actually has the disease? Yeah, that's one thing that I do is I lecture at different colleges to physical therapists that are about to graduate with their doctorates. And I tell them, you know, about SMA, you know, they can excuse me, instead of just reading about it, they can talk to somebody who has the disease. And I've gotten numerous emails from people saying, hey, thank you for enlightening us about this. You know, I tell them, if you get a patient with SMA come, you know, through your door, whether you're in an outpatient clinic or an inpatient clinic, I expect you to be the first one to raise your hand and say, I want to work with those. I want to work with that person because you're not going to break us. So know that whatever disease you have, everybody matters. Everybody's got a voice. Some people may not be able to use their voice like we do, but they have a meaning in life. And it's okay to ask for help. You know, people with SMA, you know, we have people that wipe our nose and wipe our butts. I mean, you can't run from it. You can't hide from it. And so I think myself, I'm probably easier about having a new caregiver work with me because I know I can't do it. So know what your limitations are, accept those limitations, allow yourself to have a bad day. You know, just because you think you're strong and you show that you're strong, you're going to have a bad day every once in a while. And that's okay. Don't run from it, because no matter where you hide, it'll find you. So you might as well just allow yourself to experience a bad day every once in a while. It's going to happen, whether you like it or not. But just know that you mean something to somebody. You just have to find that right somebody.
Absolutely. Thank you, Michael. And then Ty, well, sign us off here with your words of wisdom.
Yeah. Specifically, like you said, towards the disabled community, especially those living independently and requiring the use of caregivers and things like that. Something I've been trying to focus on in unlearning those burdensome thoughts that were taught has been reframing or even redefining some of the language that we use, especially when it comes to caregiving, realizing how empowering it can be to see caregiving as more than just, like Michael said, wiping our butts and wiping our noses. We can give care in return to our caregivers, and that's a really beautiful thing in building a community with your caregivers as opposed to just such a transactional exchange. You know, caregiving is listening, and caregiving is being there helping organize. And for our caregivers, we are paying them too, and that is a form of support. And so realizing that our care needs can actually be a strength and a way to care in return. That's been really empowering for me, and I would encourage our community to try to reframe that thought as well for themselves.
I love that. That is such a great analogy there. And no, it totally speaks to that. I mean, I know I have a community with my caregivers, and it really does. When both parties are connected and engaged with each other, it makes a world of difference. Mm-hmm. So I love that. Well, guys, mm-hmm. This has been fantastic. I'm so glad I invited you all. So Fareece, Matt, Michael, Ty, thank you all so much for coming in. We will have links to all of your works and social media in the description here. So I just want to thank you all again for coming on today. And for our listeners out there, you can find more stories and conversations like this by subscribing to the SMA News Today podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. You can also connect with us on our forums or visit our main website at smanewstoday.com for all the latest SMA news and perspectives. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next time. Take care.
The information in our flash briefings and podcasts are provided for informational and educational purposes only. Be sure to tune in daily to SMA News Today for the latest news and perspectives regarding the disease. Discover more content that might be of interest to you at www.smanewstoday.com. And be sure to follow us on social media and join our SMA News Today forums. a trusted SMA community ready to welcome you anytime.